Hello and welcome to Partnerships Plus. I'm Phil Hay-Sinclair and this podcast is designed to help you create and grow business partnerships that you never thought possible. You're about to listen to an Ask Me Anything or AMA episode that is co-hosted with executive coach and my good friend Melissa Rosenthal. Mel works with founders and leaders to drive growth for companies and the people in them. She works with global companies like Who Gives a Crap, QBE, Shipit, and ThoughtWorks. She also specializes in unique challenges faced by leaders in medical science, working with renowned institutes including WEHI, Doherty, and Peter Mac. And in our AMAs, she's here to ask the tough questions. If you'd like to ask a partnerships question, follow the link in the show notes. You'll also find more information about how Mel can help your organization there too. So without delay, welcome to a Partnership Plus Ask Me Anything episode.
It is nice to see you again.
It's nice to see you again. Our last AMA was quite interesting, and so I'm looking forward to diving into a bunch of questions with you for AMA number two and reminding people who are listening that if you have questions about partnership, you can submit them to us and we will talk and give you answers, the best answers we can to those questions. So, Mel, how many questions have we got today?
We've got five, and they come from, I guess, the whole spectrum of partnerships. So there are some questions for right at the beginning when you're thinking about how to set up a partnership. There's some that are when you're in the middle of it. And there's even one sort of not quite at the end, let's say, but there's one about resetting a partnership that's been in place for a while and looking at maybe kicking it off with some new energy. So we go through the whole spectrum. Let's jump into question number one. And It's a beginning question, so it's a good one to start with, I think, which is, what are your must-do recommendations for a first meeting with a potential partner?
There is so much potential anxiety that comes with meeting a new partner. And I think one of the things that you have to do out of the gate is to make sure that you don't get too into your own proposition. Whenever meeting a partner for the first time, it's all about gathering knowledge and intelligence and understanding where they stand. Because ultimately, if this goes well, as it goes through its multiple iterations of conversations and trying to work out where the middle ground is, can we work together, are values aligned, that decision is going to happen with you not in the room. So What your job to start with is to try and work out how much context can you walk into that room with. And then what can you learn in that room and then all the subsequent rooms that you'll walk into if things start to go well? So my starting point is always, can I learn from people that I know about that organization I'm about to start pitching to? So my Swiss Army knife in this kind of case is always LinkedIn. And it's always going straight to that organization and thinking, how do I reach out to people that I know, even if they're not directly connected to that organization, to help me understand more of the context of what is going on. Because obviously, I'll go to their websites, you'll go to their websites, we'll try and work out what we think they're saying, but often whatever comes out of an organization is very polished. You have no idea about the politics, the structure, the change, the challenges, the opportunity. And so the question is, how do you learn enough so that when you craft your position going into that conversation, it doesn't miss the mark entirely. In fact, you can get a sense about what some sensitivities might be like, or you might be able to understand more about who the people are that you really should be having a conversation with. And you might surprise yourself. You might already have a great existing relationship with somebody that you didn't think you had before. And that can start to short circuit a lot about what you might like to get out of that partnership.
A question for you, which is probably a little bit less about the mechanics of the meeting and the prep for the meeting, and a little bit more about the mindset, because you talked about not kind of getting too caught up in your own proposition. And, you know, I imagine most first meetings, there's some passion about it, right? Like, you wouldn't be going to the meeting if you weren't excited about it on one level.
Yeah.
How do you balance that excitement, that passion, and making sure that the potential partner understands that that's the point that you're coming from, with that, you know, that need to listen and to understand and to be curious about that?
I love the idea of walking into a conversation with a mindset that we're going to talk for about a quarter of the time to introduce ourselves, to share what we do, share what we think we know about them, and just to start to build that first early amount of trust, which really means you're not presupposing, you're not trying to hard pitch them or hard sell them. It's all about, I just like you to know that we exist. I'd like you to know that we think that there's some overlap here somewhere. And we just really like to learn a lot about you, if that's okay. And then you hand the baton across to them. They do a similar kind of thing. And then if it sort of starts to feel a bit comfortable, then you can start to introduce maybe the idea of, so we've got this hunch. And this hunch is that we think we could maybe play a role to support you in X or Y. And it's using language which can be as informal as that, because of course they'll be looking and sizing you up as well, trying to work out, well, is there an overlap here? And often that level of vulnerability that comes up with, look, we don't know and we didn't want to presuppose, but what we did want to say is we wouldn't be here if we didn't think that there was an opportunity to work together. That creates a really interesting position for them to go, well, if this is exploratory, then maybe I can share a bit about what we can do. And then all of a sudden things start to become a lot easier. And I also noticed that people's shoulders drop a little bit at that stage. Mm. It's like, this is good. This feels good. We can maybe do something here.
Yeah. And I'm imagining that you're trying to get that shoulder drop to be as early in the conversation as you possibly can.
Absolutely. Our role when we're opening a new partnership conversation is trying to accelerate the time to trust. And it's really about trying to be as confident, but also as being as vulnerable as you can. So you're not presupposing, but also saying, if there is an unknown here, then we're willing to show up and try and work out what the answer to that unknown is. And if we can find that, then we could all end up being in pretty good places.
Yeah. We've got a follow-on question from someone actually, which it seems to come naturally at this point, which is around sort of that sense of feeling ready and confident to pitch a new partnership. And avoiding that feeling of being unprepared. And I think you've already sort of talked about how to prepare, but I think, you know, what is readiness and confidence, how does that come about when you go in, especially if you feel like there's a lot at stake for the meeting you're about to have?
I think confidence comes from your own knowledge of your own business and why you think there's a reason to have that conversation in the first place. I don't think people can walk in feeling fully confident in a new meeting, right? In life, there's no situation where you walk in feeling fully confident about everything that's going to go on, because there could be a curveball, there could be the wrong meeting, you could have walked into the wrong room, right? There's all these things that can go wrong. So when you're trying to get ready for a conversation, let's just go in with, we know our stuff really well, and we're just open to having a really interesting, curious conversation with the other people across the room. And hopefully we can find a place in the middle. And I think it's really important at this point that confidence actually also is generated from the after action review of that meeting. So whenever we have conversations, whether it be a dropper of my other companies, it's really about, so what did you see? What did you hear? And it's interesting when you're able to have that reflection, you hear and see things you didn't hear and see because someone else has seen it a little bit differently. It rounds it out nicely, which also means that when you go back for your follow-up email or the thanks for having us or whatever the next steps are, there's a really neat, well-rounded position that people can go, actually, that was a pretty good meeting. I'm keen to meet you again in next month, next week, next fortnight, whenever it is.
One of the observations I'd make, you know, having spent lots of time coaching people as I have, one of the observations I would make about people is there's a really wide spectrum of people who are super, on one end, super comfortable thinking on their feet and absorbing and integrating information and being able to respond. And on the other end of the spectrum, people who really like to go away and think deeply to do that integration work.
Yeah.
And both having immense value in terms of those different processes and those different strengths, right? So there's not a judgment about which one is better or worse, but I'm curious to understand what advice you would give to people who are those kind of go away deep thinkers about how they can perform in a first meeting when we're saying confidence is about know your numbers, almost, you know, figure out whether your potential partner knows their numbers and see what that's like.
Yep.
So what advice do you give someone who's a bit more of a, I need to go away and think about that?
Oh, it's a great question. And you know what? It's about having really great questions. So when people who come into a conversation, everyone coming into a meeting like this should know their own thing really well. And that's, I'll put that as a default setting, right? If you have colleagues of yours that don't know their stuff well, then that comes down to poor preparation walking into the conversation. And I know people will think this is a bit strange, but having rehearsals about what you'll say, what I'll say, then we'll go to this, then we'll go to that, is actually a really productive thing to do going into really important conversations. The assumption that we have if we're a young company with co-founders or new team members is that they'll just be on the same page. And in many cases, that's not going to be the case. So rehearsal plays a really important role. But for those people who are maybe just a little bit more curious in their own mind, they're looking for other kinds of answers, there's real power in having two or three questions up your sleeve, which as the head of a particular team, asking a really well-placed, thoughtful question at the right time is just a crackerjack thing to demonstrate that you not only know a lot of your own content and what you're there to do, it also exposes a different level of thinking. I love seeing people sit back in their chairs when a really great question is landed and it's like,
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, and now we can actually take a bit of that armor off, debate a bit of maybe some inconvenient truths that live inside how we partner together. There might be some, look, we tried this and it didn't really work out very well kind of situation. I always find it brings like that vulnerability, that's it's sort of safe vulnerability closer for both parties, and everyone walks away with insight that maybe they didn't expect. And I think that's actually a brilliant way to finish a first meeting, even if the outcome ultimately is going to be there's not a partnership to be had. At least there is they were really good people to deal with. We had some conversations, and of course we all hope that things go well. But it's always good to have that parting of the ways. You learn some things and you can apply that into whatever the next conversations are you're going to have.
And I think, my observation would be one of the reasons why partnerships don't go well is values misalignment. And so one of the things to be really thoughtful about right at the beginning is the extent to which you are values aligned with your potential partner. And I'm wondering how you recommend going about uncovering that level of alignment. How do you express the values that you and your organization represent? And how do you go about asking the potential partner about theirs without sort of sounding like you're challenging them or suggesting that that their values are misplaced?
I've got three answers to this, and they're not sequential. They're just answers for everyone to sort of think about. I walked into a school recently where inside one of their buildings there was 24 values. And it was, so which one do I pick? Is it like a value per day, value per fortnight, value per month? Like what do we do here to sort of get our heads around all of these different words? And all the words were great words. And all of them, I'm sure, would play a role in someone's life over time. But I know that when we think about businesses and we think about the values that sometimes get hammered out at the beginning of a company's life, they get put on a wall, they get put on a website. Rarely has there been a time for those people, like teams, to really ingest and take on what those values mean. So that's point number one, is go to the website of the company and search them out. If there is not a values statement, that is red flag number one. And if they're not there, it should say to you, why have they not somehow prioritized that? The second idea is that you can thread into the early conversations some of the values by way of an example to help them understand how you act as a partner. So one of the values of Dropbuy Health, for example, was to act as an owner. And so when we talked about that in the context of partnerships, it would be that if we're in partnership and there was a decision to be made, we would be always acting in the spirit of the joint owners of a partnership. And I guess the third one is there will be often existing partnerships that this other company that you're pitching to or trying to get closer to will have. And it's completely appropriate for you to go back in time and check and see with the other people that they partnered with what that relationship was like. It's almost like partnership due diligence to sort of see how that all played out. And I always love Googling company A and company B that you're pitching and just seeing what the most recent language was that they publicly agreed to share. if there was a press release for a partnership announcement, and that was a long, long, long time ago, and then we heard nothing else since then, mm-hmm. and it says to me, so it might not have gone well, and that's fine. Some partnerships don't work out well, but you would think that the companies would be still proud to be associated. And that goes to the announcement, and do they talk about each other on their respective websites? And for some commercial relationships, they don't do that for a whole range of really good reasons. But most companies who are happy to speak about those partnerships, then they'll be there. So I think it's the third piece is really about doing some due diligence to understand if they're good to deal with. So I'm surprised by how many people actually don't do that.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, if you're going to spend a lot of time and investment of precious time getting into bed with another partner, then why not ask around and just see what they're like to deal with? And if you hear that they're not good to deal with for whatever reason, just consider that a data point. Don't consider it the reason not to move any further forward, right? All of this is trying to triangulate why it'd be great to build something together.
Yeah.
And an example maybe around that, when we think about Dropbuy Health and Virtus Health, there were so many data points that consistently told us that they were great to deal with and that they had, you know, a really long heritage in doing partnerships, that it became just really, it was reinforced in every single conversation, which today means that it's just such a pleasure to deal with them. That won't happen all the time, but life's too short to have really bad partnerships.
So the Dropbuy Virtus Health partnership is an interesting segue into our next question, actually, which is around a different type of partnership. So there are some partnerships that are really public, like a co-brand, right? And a Stella McCartney, Adidas, it's out there in the open to the point where it's in stores and it's on their website and they promote it really heavily. There are other partnerships that are, you know, a partnership for the provision of services that help one company do something that they need to do and adds a capability that they don't have themselves. But to an end customer, you're blind to the fact almost that that partnership exists. And my sense is that Drop had a number of those partnerships that it participated in. And it's a bit long-winded, but bear with me. I'm kind of curious here to go, is there a difference in your mind about the way you approach partnerships that are very public versus the partnerships that actually sit in private, sit behind closed doors?
So the short answer is yes, there is. And there's a model that we talk about when it comes to the differences between those. But just to be clear, there should be an equal amount of pride that is made available between partners, regardless of whether it's above the line or whether it's below the line. And so when we think about those above the line co-branded opportunities, like you just mentioned before, where it's very public, that's about growing out, right? That's about growing your business, your reach, your brand in a way that people can very easily see. And then you have partnerships, which is about growing inside. And it's about growing inside to the point where you might not have all the capabilities you need to be really powerful in whatever it is that you do. And so you end up going and finding partners that can plug into you. Now, they might be supply chain partners. They might be capability partners who you need a certain skill set, tool set that they've got and would actually be better to buy that as opposed to build it internally. And there are some of those which, particularly in technology, where those partnerships remain very quiet because they're actually a competitive advantage. But the real point here is partnerships should be thought about in those two contexts. Can a partnership help me grow inside? And can a partnership help me grow outside? They are fundamentally different in the optics, but usually they share a lot of characteristics, right? They share a lot of the things that the intention needs to be clear, the contribution, the upside in both parties need to be clear, how to manage risks and issues and discussions and debates. All of that is consistent. It's just that some of them live in the world that everyone can see and some of them live in the world that no one can really see. And it's really up to the partners to work out the extent to which they want to have that kind of publicity. Going back to Dropbuy Health, we have this unbelievably wonderful partnership with Lifeblood. And we do that because they're into clinical research relating to blood products and plasma and how we do discovery work. And so are we. And so when we do that, we will talk about that as much as we possibly can. but there's not a lot to see because it's really just really high quality laboratory science. And is that going to really, you know, capture the attention of a lot of people? Well, maybe not. They'll think it's nice, it's great, it's interesting, but it's not going to really slam it home. But it does create a great sort of umbrella connection between the two brands and the intention of what we're trying to do. And there are many companies like that. I think when it comes to those that difference, just know that partnership can be there to build you on the inside, but it can also be there to build you on the outside as well.
Yeah, great.
Okay, I'm going to change tack for a second because we've got a question from somebody who's just joined a new organization in a partnerships role. So they're responsible for some existing partnerships. And the observation from the person who sent in the question was that partnerships in their particular company that they've just joined, they sort of just paid lip service to. It doesn't seem to be the focus and the energy around them that perhaps is warranted. And so the question that's being asked by the person who sent this in was, you know, where do you start when it comes to resetting?
Oh, such a good question. And there are so many partnerships that languish because of a change in leadership, a change in strategy, a change of people. And I think the opening gambit here is you can reset a partnership at any point. Mm-hmm. If it's been languishing for some time, if it's been completely neglected, that can be reset. If you've been inside a partnership for 8 months, 9 months, 10 months, and markets have changed and things have happened, you can reset it then too. So there's the opening rule here is it can be reset anytime.
But
That's all right. Oh, I was going to say, but the thing is that if you are new into a role or if you've inherited a partnership because there's been a change of internal structures, the thing that really needs to be cautioned is that you may not have all the context that you need to know why that partnership was set up in the first place. And what I see often happen is that somebody inherits partnerships and they're being told a single version of the history and the story of that partnership. And then all of a sudden it's, yeah, I don't think so. I think, you know, I'll deal with it some other time, but I'm not going to dedicate any kind of real horsepower to understanding what was under the hood and the intention and the history. And that's often a giant mistake.
And so in that, I guess, pursuit of context, would you start internally with the company you've just joined, or would you start with the partner?
So there's a model. I'll link to this in the show notes, but there's a model that we use, which is all about, again, trying to triangulate the context. And so there's going to be people who are historically involved internally. Then you've got the partner themselves, who it might feel like a new meeting, another conversation. But like we talked about before, walking into a new conversation with a partner that has been a pre-existing relationship, it's, yes, an introduction. Yes, it's a, so how's it going? From your point of view, what's going on? And that can be a really refreshing debate and discussion because if they've felt neglected and all of a sudden there's some attention, there's the capacity for the discussion to be, actually, we've rethought the partnership and we've got some ideas. We'd like to share them with you. But it's all about trying to work out what that looks like and getting some history. And really, the person who should be trying to create that history brief for you is the person who's on point on that partnership, because it's really their job to do that well.
And so assuming you've done the triangulation, you feel like you've got a good sense of the context, you've got good appetite on the partner side to continue and to you know, invest in the partnership. What's your advice for people sort of internally within their own company for the reinvigoration?
Well, I think there's the most important thing that we can do when we've gone, okay, we've made an active decision to then try and reset and reinvigorate. It's trying to work out what didn't go so well to get us to this point and what are the new set of ambitions that we can do together.
Yeah.
And let's just at this point say, let's history be history and bygones be bygones. If something hasn't worked out well, we're drawing a line in the sand and we're going to move this forward for a defined period to see if this is going to work. Let's put some milestones around it, some structure, some reporting, some regular interface so that we can see if this is actually working or not. And look, everyone, let's just be really clear that if it's not going to work out well, then we'll make decisions at that point, but let's give ourselves a chance over the next quarter, over the next half year, to try and work out what that looks like, acknowledging that this partnership might be one of many things going on in the business, and it might just take a bit of extra time to work that out. So I think it's a pretty honest conversation. Mm-hmm. And again, when people walk away from that conversation, it's a bit of a relief. And it just becomes an open conversation, because in all of this, the underlying governing rule of all partnerships is there should be no surprises. So if you've picked this up again and you've decided to reinvigorate it, let's just make sure that nobody involved in that partnership is ever going to be subject to a surprise. So we covered five questions in today's AMA, and the best thing you can do to help us, to help you, is to ask us more questions. You'll find a link in the show notes, which will take you to a page where you can send us questions. And we do this every month. So if you would like to ask us a question, you can do it anonymously. And we would love nothing more than to get you an answer as quick as we can. So look forward to receiving your question as soon as you've got it.